Now we're holding on page 12 in Psachim, second line, middle of Os Yud Beis. We started learning yesterday about that a Talmid Chacham shouldn't eat by a Suda that's not a Suda Shal Mitzvah. And we gave as an example where a Yisrael, and specifically we said further on it means an Amoritz, marries a Bas Koyin would be one example. So that led us into a discussion of whether it's good to marry a Bas Koyin or not. It boiled down to a Talmid Chacham, yes, and Amoritz, no. So now continuing, going back to that topic of a Talmid Chacham indulging himself in sudas that are not sudas from mitzvah. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yitzchak, kol anenem is sudas harishus. Anybody who enjoys a sudas harishus, and here we don't even necessarily mean a Talmid Chacham. Here we're talking about in general, even not a Talmid Chacham, if he enjoys too much of a Sudas HaRishus, L'Soif Goyla, eventually he'll go into Golos, because his indulging himself in that Gashmistic of pleasures takes him away from Torah and eventually, and Mitzvahs, and eventually brings him to a state where he needs Golos. Shenema, as we find the Navi criticizing the people of his time, talking about how they're indulging themselves in all kinds of luxuries, he says, V'Ochlim Korim Mitzoyim, they eat the fat ones from among the sheep, and they're eating the calves that are from the stall where also they're fattened up. And the next pasuk continues, therefore they're going to go into Golos at the beginning of all the ones who go into Golos. So in other words, they're enjoying too much of the Sudas HaRishus, and in particular, therefore, he's referring to the Aseres HaShvatim. We learned back in Shabbos, we learned over there, Gemara had an expression over there about the wine of Prugissa, which was a very high quality wine, and the hot springs of Diumsis in Eretz Yisrael. Those eventually cut them off from the Jewish people because they started overindulging themselves in those taivas, and that led them to go from bad to worse until they were chayev golos. So now the Rif points out, the fact is, we did say before that it's a Talmid Chacham specifically shouldn't be eating by a Suda Sheinu Shel Mitzvah, implying that for other people it would be fine, and he was saying it goes into Golos. So he says, for example, let's say you have the cases we talked about before, a Bas Koyin marrying a Yisrael, or a daughter of a Talmid Chacham marrying an Amoritz, then we're saying a Talmid Chacham shouldn't be present at such a thing. Other people can be present. It's for a wedding, it's for a Simchas Chasin V'Kala. But by a Sudas Rishus, which is not even that, not even a Sud, there's no trace of a mitzvah in it at all, then nobody should be indulging themselves in those kinds of service. The Pashas bit could be either quantity or quality. I mean, the expression hanenim is sudas harishus, which implies, in other words, you could have a person who goes to such a suda as an obligation. Taking the Rif's definition over here his distinction a little further, let's say, for example, you're going to the wedding, even though it's, as we're saying, not the best kind, because, for example, it's an Amoritz marrying a Bas Koyin or whatever, but you're doing it primarily to be Mesameach Chosin Kala. They invited you, it would be insulting to them not to go, it's one of those weddings where there's not very many people there, and therefore your presence is making a real difference, and that's different. You're not going there primarily to be Nana. You're going over there primarily for a higher purpose. Here we're talking about where the idea is your nana, that your primary goal over there is just to enjoy the good food and drink. So the Gemara continues. Going back to a Talmid Chacham specifically, when he goes and increases his sudas in all places, meaning, in other words, again, he's going to every suda that there is and enjoying himself over there. Eventually, in other words, he develops extensive tastes from all the good food that he's eating everywhere. So now, and being that, in fact, the Chassam Sofer says in his Chedushim that we're not even necessarily talking only about a Talmid Chacham. A different person would have the same problems also. But the difference is, for example, a regular person might, if he finds he can't support his expensive habits, he may start stealing. A Talmid Chacham is not going to stoop to that, but nevertheless, he's going to have other problems that we're describing over here. So eventually he causes his house to be destroyed because he can't keep up. So he uses up all his money. He ends up having to sell all his furniture and everything in order to keep up his expensive tastes. Umalmanis Ishtu Umyasimus Gozolov. He causes his wife to become an Almona, and Gozolov literally means his fledgling, but it means his children, to become Yosomim. Not literally an Almona and a Yosim, Rashi says, but in other words, what happens? Because, again, he's not going to stoop to stealing or doing something like that, but what is he going to do? He's also not going to go, he's also, because he has the dignity of a Talmid Chacham, he's not going to go around begging, but what he'll do is he'll go someplace else, far away, in order to see if he can earn more money over there. So the result is his wife is not literally an almana, but in effect she's one because her husband is away from her, and his children the same way, they are growing up as Yisomim without their father around. Also, Marsha points out, it also goes with what we just said before, called Nenim Mesudas Rishus L'Sod Goyla. For that reason alone, even if it's not a matter of keeping up his expensive habits, just the fact that he was Nenim Mesudas Rishus, we said that eventually caused him to be Chayav Golus, and therefore, again, the result is that his wife and children are left abandoned. And the Gemara continues, V'talmudim Eshakeach Mimenu. He ends up forgetting his learning because he's too busy trying to earn a living and then settling in wherever he is now. So therefore he's not able to review his learning, so he ends up forgetting it. Umachloikis rabbis boys olav, and many great machloikasin come against him. Rashi gives two reasons. Number one, because he's forgotten his learning, he's first though he grew up and has been living the first part of his life as a Talmid Chacham. So what happens now? Inevitably, he's going to get into discussions in Torah with people where he is now, and there's going to end up being arguments because he's going to maintain that he knows what he's talking about and he doesn't realize how much he's forgotten. A second reason, Rashi says, is because he's buying a lot on credit. Well, eventually the storekeepers are going to start coming after him, and therefore, the result is going to be big machlokes. Marisha points out another point as well, which is we find Psukim in Mishlei, we have Psukim where Shlomo HaMelech describes what happens to a person who indulges in too much drinking, and among other things, he uses the expression "lemi oi," who ends up saying "oi va'avoi ochen vei," and who ends up "lemi medonim," who ends up having fights. Is he continues "lama'achra malayayim," people who stay up late drinking wine. So drinking wine itself, that person gets drunk, and that itself provokes arguments and quarrels between him and other people. Anyway, udvorav einem nishmoyim. Also, what he says, nobody pays attention to, because like this, they realize how much he doesn't know anymore and what he's become. Umchawol shem shemayim is causing chilul Hashem because people look at this guy who is a Talmid Chacham and look at the way he's behaving. V'shem obi v'shem rabbi, and also he's desecrating the name of his father and his rebbe, because when people find out who his father is and who his rebbe is, then they're going to say, as the Gemara expresses it in Yom. Whatever the lashon is, you know, ochen vei to the parents that produce such a kid, and to the bein who produce such a talmid. The gurdim shame ra loyvel of no ben noy absoy faladuris, and he causes a bad name for himself and his children and his grandchildren until the end of generations. So my specifically, what kind of bad name are we talking about? Omer Abaye correlate bar mecham tanuri. So Abaye says they're going to nickname his children. They're going to, Rashi explains it means that all these four things that we're going to mention over here are all things that people are going to call his children. Derogatory names they're going to call his children because of their father's habits. Bar mecham tanuri, the son of the oven warmer. Like their father is like such a lo yutzlach that all he can do is warm up ovens for a living, or like he's constantly warming up his oven in order to cook and bake food for himself because he's overindulgent. So people call his children by that derogatory name. Marshall says no, it means that he himself, sometimes the word bar doesn't always mean a son of, sometimes it means somebody who has a shaychus to. A bar mitzvah, for example, is not a son of a mitzvah, means somebody who has a shaychus now to mitzvahs. So therefore, bar mecham tanuri would mean the person who he himself is the oven warmer. And the same thing with the other ones. Rava Amar Bar Market De Kubi. Rava says they're going to call his children, according to Rashi, or him himself, according to Marsha, the one who dances in taverns. Meaning, Rashi explains, you have these people who are these later gayers who they want to earn a few coins, so they want people should buy them a drink for free, so they go and dance and jump around and act silly in taverns and in bars in order that people should buy them a drink. So that's the kind of person that this Talmid Chacham becomes, and people make fun of him for that, or his children for that. Rapapa Amabar Malchuk Pinchi, Rapapa says they call him the son of, or the one who, licks the plates. Like as if he's such a glutton, like even after the plate is empty, he'll continue licking to get every drop of the food off it. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word malach pincha as a slang term, kind of a slangy term, meaning what we call in English a bootlicker or something else licker, as we know the expressions. How they got that from this Gemara or where they got it from, I don't know, but that's, yeah. Anyway. Malachas Pinsky. They, in English, you have the expression of bootlicker, or you have more vulgar expressions for that, for somebody who kisses up to people higher than him. So in Hebrew, they use the word Malachas Pinsky for that. How they got that from this Gemara exactly, I don't know. Maybe like, so to speak, like you have, you know, the first guy is eaten, and then this guy is like so eager to curry any crumbs of favor from him, like he'll even lick what's left of the bowl after him. I don't know. Anyway, Rav Huno, Shmaya, Omer, Bar Mochrova, they'll also make fun of him. They'll call him the one who folds up his clothing and goes to sleep on it. Meaning Rashi describes, that's, you have drunk people do that. They don't bother going home to sleep. They just take their clothes and they pile it under them and they go to sleep there. The word moch Rashi brings from a different Gemara means to fold up. And Rava means him Rava is the Aramaic equivalent of Ravat, so he lies down and goes to sleep right there. So these are all derogatory names that people call such a person because he degraded himself so much. So you've got Belozer ben Aruch, it wasn't that he was Marga Sudasi b'chomokim. With him, there was, we just mentioned, the Chamur de Pugisa, or Maya de Diumsis. The Gemara says he lived in Diumsis, we learned that in Shabbos. He moved to Diumsis, and he ended up indulging in what they had over there in terms of the spas and whatever, and yeah, eventually he forgot his learning. So it's not exactly the same as we have over here, but yes, it is. There is at least that Meshakeach Talmud, he has that in common. Yeah. The Gemara continues, getting back to who should marry who. A person should always sell, man should always sell, even be willing to sell everything he has, and marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham themselves don't always necessarily have much money. So you may have to put, in other words, when it comes to the wedding expenses and the expenses of setting up a house or whatever, you may have to be contributing a lot more than your in-laws. Nevertheless, you should do that. Suppose he ends up dying, or suppose he has to go into Golus, for whatever reason, then he has more of a guarantee that his children will be Talmid Chachamim. The Rambam phrases it that the daughter of an Am HaAretz, the Rambam says, doesn't know Keser Torah. She doesn't know the crown of Torah. She knows maybe in some vague way that Torah is important, but she didn't grow up with it to understand how important it is, and therefore to put in that extra effort to make sure when the father is not around that the children should become Talmid Chachamim. Whereas if she's a Bas Talmid Chacham, she grew up with that kind of mentality, and therefore she's going to transmit it to her children even if the husband is not able to. So then, on the other hand, a person should not marry the daughter of an Amoritz. She messe gola, one of Amir Oritz. If he dies or he goes into Golus, his children will wind up being Amir Oritz because his wife doesn't know them. With that said, though, here and the next whole piece of Gemara over here that we talk about not marrying a Bas HaMa'aretz, the Taz makes a point on it. In the Taz has several explanations of this whole piece over here in his Pirush on Ebn Ezer in Simon Beis, where it talks about over there who it's good to marry and who not. And among other things, he mentions that it's not always an absolute given. Sometimes you have a Bas HaMa'aretz who on her own discovers the beauty and the greatness and the importance of Torah. That's not the kind of thing we're talking about over here. Don't reject her as a potential shidduch just because her father. Nowadays, you have Balis Truva who discover this on their own and go and learn even though their parents and their grandparents and who knows how many generations back knew next to nothing. We're not talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about where she continues with the mentality that she inherited from her parents. So the Gemara continues, again, a person should always be willing. By the way, Marsha does mention a point that you do have a Gemara elsewhere in the Dorim that says that Bnei Aniyim Mehen Teitzei Torah, that the specifically from the poor, from the children of the poor, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin also, from the children of the poor, Torah will come. So that means, in other words, that we're talking about they're poor, but on the other hand, they're Talmid Chachamim. So therefore, Torah tends to come from them. Now, on the other hand, what you have is, Marsha says that The flip side of it is, though, there's a different Gemara that says that you find, unfortunately, that the Talmid Chacham does not have children who are Talmid Chachamim. And the Gemara discusses it, but there are a few reasons why that is, among other things, because sometimes the parents have a sense of gaiva, and therefore their children grow up improper. So it all depends, really. When we're talking about over here, Bas Talmid Chacham, we mean over here the kind who has the proper midas that he'll be able to transmit it to the next generation as well. So he should always be selling everything he has to marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, the Yasi Bita, the Talmid Chacham, and also to marry off his daughter to a Talmid Chacham. Moshe le'invei ha'gefen be'invei ha'gefen. This is where you have the words of the famous song. It's like when you grasp together mix together the juice of grapes from a grapevine with grapes from another grapevine. Dover Nora Miskabel. It's a beautiful and acceptable thing. It's a beautiful thing that a Talmid Chacham marries the daughter of a Talmid Chacham and Miskabel. So Rashi says Miskabel as in, like, people accept it. People accept it as a normal and good thing, as opposed to the next Ein Miskabel is going to be that nut. Maushar says that's a bit of a dosik, and he says miskabel means like a graft like that, like a good proper graft will take, and then the tree will produce stronger fruit, and the same way, a combination like that will produce good, strong Talmid Chachamim and Yirei Shamayim. As opposed to v'lo la amaretz, but on the other hand, he should not marry the daughter of an amaretz. Moshe le'invei ha'gefen be'invei ha'sneh. That's like trying to graft together grapes from a grapevine together, or mixed together, grapes from a grapevine together with berries from a bush. Dover mechor, it's an ugly thing, the ainim eskabel, and it's not acceptable. People consider it to be an improper thing, and it doesn't produce good children. Now, Maor Shaw actually refers over here to something that he says in Sanhedrin. The fact is that we're saying over here that you should marry a daughter of a Talmid Chacham. Now, the Gemara elsewhere also mentions that a person has to be careful, lidovik the Talmid Chachamim, that Amram even lists it as one of the 613 mitzvahs, that you have to join together with Talmid Chachamim, among others, that you intermarry with them. Now, the question is, if you're an Amma Oretz, you should be doing that also on the face of it. But then, don't we have the problem over here that you're not supposed to intermarry, or that you don't want to marry the daughter of an Amma Oretz? So he says over there, the vote is fakert. If you're the kind of, further on in the Gemara, we're going to be talking about a kind of Amma Oretz who's very hostile to the Chachamim. But here we're talking about, no, if you're the kind of Amma Oretz who's ready to join in marriage with a Talmid Chacham, and you're going to learn from them, rather than you expect to be makabel from the Talmid Chacham, rather than to be mashpia from your ignorant ways on him, then abba, it's a very good thing. So that would be what the Gemara means over here. V'yisa bas Talmid Chacham. You yourself may not be of the caliber yet, but you're doing it because you want to become close to and learn from the Talmid Chacham, rather than because you plan to influence them with your ways. So the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan lo'olam yimka adam. A person should always sell everything he has, and like we said, to marry the daughter of a Talmid Chacham, because then, like we said, he has more of a guarantee that his children will be brought up as Talmid Chacham. Loy Motza Bas Talmid Chacham. What if he can't find the daughter of a Talmid Chacham to marry? Yisa Bas Gdolei Ador, then let him marry a daughter of Gdolei Ador. Now, we usually think of Gdolei Ador as like the top level Rabbonim, that you have a few of them in every generation, that the whole Jewish people relies on them. Here, what we mean, Rashi says, Gdolei Ador means people, Anshei Maisev Tzadikim, people who are known to have Maisim Tovim and to act in a way of Tzadikim, so they may not be Talmid Chachamim, but they're Eruch Yidin, and they're well known for their Maisim Tovim. Loy Motza Bas Gdolei Ador, if you don't find such a girl to marry, Yisa Bas Rosh HaKnesias, then marry the daughter of a Rosh HaKnesias, which means basically the president or the gabbai of a shul. Because he has an important job, and therefore also, you know, he's running things in a shul after all, so therefore you can be sure that a certain amount of Torah is to be found in, and Mais and Tovim are to be found in that family. Loy Motza Bas Rosh HaKnesias, Yisa Bas Gaboi Tzedakah, then marry the daughter of Gaboi Tzedakah. Because Rashi points out, you only appoint as Gaboi Tzedakah people who are good and trustworthy. After all, they're handling funds of Tzedakah. You want to make sure they don't skim some off for themselves. The Gemara actually has an expression someplace else, I think in Bava Basra, that says you shouldn't give money into a Kupa Shal Tzedakah, into a Tzedakah fund, unless you know that the one in charge of it is completely trustworthy, like the Chanina ben Tzadion, where we have the story over there in Avodah Zarah, where one time he mixed up his own money with Moi's Torim, and he gave the whole thing to Aniyim. So a Gaboi Tzedakah has to be a very trustworthy Eruv Chayyid. So loy motzabas gabait stocker. If you can't find that, yisabas malamed chenotis, then the next best is to marry the daughter of a malamed. Tosfos contrasts this with the Gemara in Bava Metzia over there, which implies, on the face of it, it implies that the Malam Lichinotis are higher than the Gabor Tzedakah, and Tosfos gives a resolution for it. The Gemara over there compares, there's a pasuk that says, Maskilim Yazhiru Kizoya Harakia, the ones who understand, in other course, are gonna shine, La'osid Lavo, like the shining of the sky, Umatzdike Rabim, and those who cause Tzedakah for the Rabim, which means, the Gemara says, means the Malam de Chinokas are gonna be Takei Chavim, like the stars, on the face of it, aren't the stars brighter than the sky? And Tosfos says, actually not. The Zohar Rakia, the glow of the sky, is actually greater than the glow of the stars. What that means exactly is a little hard to understand, but the point is, in other words, that Tosfos is saying that, yes, the sky outshines the stars, and in the same way we're saying in our Gemara that the Gabot Tzedakah outshine the Malam Tzedakah. Anyway, the Lo Yisa Bas Ame Aretz. Under no circumstances should he marry the daughter of an Ame Aretz. Mipnei Shehem Sheket, the Ame Aretz themselves are Sheket, or something disgusting, because of the way that they live. Marsha points out, in fact, the word sheketz is often used in connection with Avodah Zarah, which you're not supposed to have anything to do with. In the same way, you should try to stay as far away as possible from an Ama Oretz. Which, by the way, I mean, you know, we're kind of, before we were talking more about just an Ama Oretz, you know, the kind of yid who never had a chance to learn. Further on, the Gemara is going to be talking, and so it seems, maybe even over here already, we're talking about more of an aggressive kind of Ama Oretz, the kind who actually actively hates and persecutes the Chachamim, who does serious Averis or whatever. So that would be primarily the kind that we're talking about, our Sheketz. Again, when you have one who is, you know, he knows his place, he realizes that he hasn't learned very much, and he knows to have derech eretz for the Chachamim, we're not necessarily talking about him. Anyway, on sheisehem sheretz, their wives are like a sheretz, which is also like something that you touch it and you become tamei. The comparison, Marsha says, is as far, so Rashi says in a general way, because they're not careful with mitzvahs. Marsha says specifically it means they're not careful with the mitzvah of nidah. And in fact, that Taz over there in Evan Ezer says that's why we talk to use the word sheretz specifically for them. The word sheretz means a little creepy, crawly creature of some kind, but it also has the meaning of increasing prolifically, like you have Bnei Yisrael Poru Vayishvatsu. So what it means is they're prolific, they have children, but unfortunately they're not being careful with Hilchas Nidah, with Hilchas Taras and Mishpacha, and therefore their children are being born in a way that they are being conceived in a way they shouldn't have been. So that's why we're speaking of sheretz. Va'al b'nei sehem hu omer, and about the daughters of Amei Aretz, as the pasuk says, Oros shoychid b'mkol behema, cursed is somebody who is a man who has relations with any behema. So Rashi says they're like a behema in the sense that they don't have an understanding of the importance of Torah. Marsha, we had something about that in Eruvin as well, where the Gemara said that Yoshvit Srifin, that people live in huts and temporary dwellings like that, is also, the Gemara said on them, Odo Shoshavim called Behema. Marsha explained over there, the vote is rather, because they live like half uncivilized, they don't have bathhouses in the area, so things like that. So here, apparently, we're talking about something similar as well. These Amei Aretz and the Pashtus, the Amei Aretz we're talking about, often worked as farmers, so they live out in the middle of nowhere, and they don't have the conveniences of civilized life, such as bathhouses and things like that. And therefore, in that sense also, they're a little similar to a behavior. Again, Taz makes the point over here, like we said before, that we're talking about where this girl thinks that that's the normal way to live, the way an Ama Aretz does, as opposed to where she starts realizing on her own, or in some other way, she starts realizing the importance of Torah, then that's different. Continues the Gemara, Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Ama Aretz also lechol basar, and Ama Aretz is also to eat meat. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Zois Torah Sabehema Va'oif, this is the Torah of the animal and the bird. That means Kola Oisifa Torah Mutalechal Basar Behema Va'oif. Anybody who occupies himself with Torah is allowed to eat the meat of animals and birds. V'chol She'ena Oisifa Torah Osir. Anybody who doesn't is Osir. Now, on the face of it, the reason is just because. So why should that be? There are a couple of ideas behind it. One idea is, we just said that the Amei Aretz in a way are like a behemoth. Well, then, by what right do they have to eat other behemoths and chayas, the Eden and Ophis? The Eidrisha gave that right to humanity, but if a person is not living as a human being and not living up to his potential, then maybe he doesn't have the rights to be eating the lower creatures. Marsha says a practical thing in it. Why don't we mention fish then? He says because it's really more a matter of and I'm an artist, not really familiar with the halachas of kashrus in full. So how can he be eating beside the hema and oif, where there's so many details that you need to know about what's kosher and whatnot, and he's going to end up being nifshal in them. As opposed to fish, it's fairly straightforward. Does it have fins and scales, or does it not? And therefore, an amaretz should be allowed to eat meat. There's an idea, I'll be Kabbalah, and which is brought in various places in Chassidus, that an idea behind it also is the whole idea of eating meat is to elevate the ruchnius, to extract the sparks of kedusha, from the energy of kedusha from the thing you're eating, and an amaretz is not doing that. So what business does he have eating it? He's not going to be mila in any way, as Alter Rebbe talks about it in Perek Zayin of Tanya, that when a person eats and it's not, then he's not doing it l'shem shemayim. Then instead of bringing it up to kedusha, he's dragging himself down into klippus. So in that sense, also lechol basa. There's also a chassidish avort on that, but they say that also, and we know that also literally means tied and bound to. So what it means is fakir, it's an amaretz. Feels that also lechol basar, I have to eat meat. I can't live on any other alternatives. Whereas a talmid chacham should realize that you don't have to eat meat. You can make do with lesser kind. You can make do with lesser kind of food, and you can control your taivas. As for example, you think of like the famous story involving Rav Shmuel Munkus and the meat over there by the Fabranian. Okay, continuing on this topic of amei aretz, and here again we're going to be talking about a somewhat different kind of Amah Oretz than we talk about throughout Shas. Most of the time, an Amah Oretz in Shas is somebody, he never had a chance to learn properly. He had to leave Cheder when he was young and go to work, whatever it is, and he never properly learned. Here we're going to be talking about some other kind of Amah Oretz. What kind exactly? So Tosfos explains that we're talking about, for example, somebody who... We're talking about Makir v'koifer l'hachas, Tosfos says. He knows what Torah and mitzvahs are, and he's davka denying it and not keeping Torah l'hachas. So that's the kind of thing that's going to be the kind of person that we're talking about over here in the Gemara. The Rif goes even further. He says we're talking about, for example, that he's literally rots achar erva. We're talking about a person who's for example, literally chasing after a woman to commit adultery or whatever with her, where we know, we learned yesterday or the day before that you're allowed lachsila benafsha. Now, in that case, it wouldn't necessarily be only an amaretz. The same din would apply to a talmid chacham as well, but we're not going to assume that a talmid chacham would fall so low as to act that way. But either way, we're talking about that kind of person, and that's what the Gemara is going to say now about killing him, for example. But we're talking about Parshat where he's a roif. So Omer Abelazar, Ama Oretz Mutav Noichrei B'Yom Kippurim Shechalias B'Shabbos. And Ama Oretz, you're allowed to stab him on Yom Kippur, which comes out on Shabbos, even though it's Yom Kippur, everybody's moichel one another, and it's the holiest day, and it's Shabbos, and so forth. But still, you're allowed to get rid of such a person on Shabbos, which is also Yom Kippur. So again, according to Tosfos, we're talking about somebody who, because of the way he's acting, he's kofa lahathis, you have good reason to think that he's actually a robber and a murderer. And therefore, so he may not be an immediate danger right now, but nevertheless, you're allowed to get rid of him when you have the opportunity. And according to the Rif, we're talking about even more so, we're talking about that right now he's showing himself to be a clear and present danger by being roided of somebody. So Marsha says another word. Marsha says we don't have to say that noichrei over here literally means to stab him and to kill him. It means you're allowed to embarrass him in public. Usually we know that to malbin pnei chaver berabim, the Gemara tells us, is like shoifech damim, is like spilling his blood. But here, this kind of person, you're allowed to even publicly humiliate him on Yom Kippur shechalias b'Shabbos, even though Yom Kippur is a time everybody's b'sholim with one another, and it's Shabbos also, but you're still allowed to because this is the kind of person that you're talking about. And the idea is, I guess, either it would be, again, if he's a roidif, then obviously it's to do it to save his victim. If it's like Tosfos said that we're talking about where he's a kofa lahakis, then the idea is to remove him from the community so he doesn't have an effect on other people in the future. And if you're going like Marsha, it could also be that this way, maybe it may be a shock treatment that will have an effect on him also and cause him to change.
Right.
So that's the concept of a Moser, yes. So you know, we talked about yesterday, we talked about, for example, Rav Kahana killed a Yid who was about to Moser on another Yid, yeah. In fact, at the end, Rav Reuven Margolius tells a story from when he was a boy, literally that happened on Yom Kippur, as the Gemara is saying over here. There was an infamous Moser in his town. And everybody's afraid of him. This Moser comes to Shul Yom Kippur all wrapped up in his talus and looking for all the world like a frum yid. Some people went over to the Mizrach Bant over there. They grabbed a hold of him. They stuffed his talus in his mouth so he can't cry out. And they took him to the river and he floated away. And afterwards, when the police came nosing around, everybody claimed that they didn't see what was going on. They were too partipped in Yom Kippur davening. But that's a literal example of what we're saying over here in this Gemara. Anyway. So when Rabbi Lazar says this about stabbing him, they ask him, Rebbe, Emor L'Shoichte, why are you talking about the expression of stabbing him, say that you can shecht him on Yom Kippur and Shechal Lias V'Shamas? Why Dabke use the expression stabbing? Marsha points out, in keeping with what he's saying, that we're talking about embarrassing him with tantamount to Shvichas Damim, both stabbing and shchita involve spilling his blood. Therefore, when we're talking about malvin pnei chaveira barabim, which is metaphorically spilling his blood, then therefore, so Rabbi Lozer used one expression, and his talmidim are asking why he didn't use it for the other. On the other hand, he says, zeton bracha, zed ein ton bracha. The difference is, when you shecht, you have to make a bracha. When you're being noicher, you don't make a bracha. In other words, it may be something that you have to do, but it's not something you should be making a bracha and praising the Eibishter for the opportunity to do. It's a necessary evil, kind of. The Amar Rav Elazar, also Rav Elazar says, Amar Oretz also le slavis ima baderet. You're not allowed to. By the way, I forgot to mention the Taz in that same section in Ibn Ezra says, Taka, why is the Gemara using the word Amar Oretz over here, where it could be misleading? Throughout Shas, and Amar Oretz again means somebody who innocently doesn't know what he's doing wrong, and here we're using it for somebody who maliciously is doing wrong. And by the way, the Beis Yosef talks about and says not necessarily, at least as far as the part about not marrying a daughter of an Amar Oretz, not necessarily. It's talking about this malicious kind. It can even mean the one who's more innocently so. But certainly when we're talking about over here about Manoichra and all of this, we're definitely talking about the one who's an out-and-out no-goodnik. Why are we using such a misleading term as Amaretz? And the Taz says, because the Gemara wants to stress by that this is a person who's going to remain an Amaretz because he has no respect for Tamar Chachamim, and therefore, when's he ever going to learn from them? Mashenken, a regular Amaretz, eventually can turn around and become at least a shtickle Tamar Chacham by having respect for the Chachamim, and as we said before, intermarrying with them and so forth and learning from their ways. So therefore, that's why the Gemara uses the word Amaretz over here to symbolize somebody who's definitely going to remain an Amaretz unless he makes a 180-degree turn in his life. Anyway, so for Amar Rav Elazar, Amaretz also the slavis in the devah. You're not allowed to accompany or be accompanied with an Amaretz on the road. Shenema, as the passage says, ki hu chayecha v'orachemecha, the Torah is your life and the length of your days. Hu achayev leichos, this person himself who doesn't care to bother learning Torah, he doesn't care about his own life. Achayev chaveira leikoshkin, how much more so he's not going to have any regard for somebody else's life. Now, that can mean, Tosfa says, it can mean that literally we're talking about, it could mean that literally we're talking about that he's choshed that he might kill the other person he's going with. Or it could mean, not necessarily, he's going to actually kill him, but just that Marusha says he's not going to go that far. He's still machped on Shvichas Damim, but at least what it might be is, he might not, if you have, for example, a situation where he needs to put in extra effort to save your life, then he may not bother because he doesn't understand the importance of life and he doesn't understand the importance of Torah. You may say, you know, well, I'll make a token effort or whatever, and if not, oh, well, too bad, you know. So therefore, continues the Gemara, Omer of Shmuel Banachmeni, Omer of Yonason, or Yochanan, Amaretz Mutu Lekore Kadog. You're allowed to rip an Amaretz like a fish. That means to rip him from the back. So again, this can go with, we're talking about that he's a roideth, and the only way to stop him is to kill him. It can be, for example, like Tosfa says that he's a known, that he's a known dangerous person, even if he's not actually doing it right now, and therefore you're allowed to eliminate him. Or like Marshall says, we may be talking about again that, we don't mean literally to kill him, we just mean to completely humiliate him and break him publicly in order that other people don't learn from him and in order that he himself may change his mind and shape up. So Maharshal says it actually goes with what we said before about being shofech damim. How are you shofech damim? How do you extract the maximum blood from a fish? By ripping it in two from the back. So therefore, that's why the Gemara uses that metaphor. The Gemara continues, Tanya, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Shoyisi Ama Oretz, when I was an Ama Oretz, and we know he was until he was 40 years old, Amarti, mi yitin le Tamar Chocham ba'anashchenu kachamur. If only somebody would give me a Tamar Chocham, I would bite him like a donkey. And the idea is, before we should explain, that the Amei Oretz, first of all, they knew some of these things that the Chachamim were saying against them in Gemaras like this. But besides that, also, even if we're talking about the regular run-of-the-mill Amei Oretz, who's not malicious like we're talking about over here, still, the fact is, the Chachamim had to be careful with dinim of Tumah V'Tara and the dinim of Maisris, which Amei Oretz are not. So therefore, of necessity, the Chachamim had to keep their distance socially and physically from the Amei Oretz. And the Amei Oretz resented that and thought that the Chachamim are doing it stam out of guidance. So Rabbi Akiva was expressing that point. Omru lo tamidav. So Rabbi Akiva's tamidim asked him, Rebbe, Amar Kakelev, why are you comparing it that you would have bitten them like a donkey, say like a dog? A dog is normally what you think of when you think of biting. Omru lahem, he says, Zen nosha for shogra etzim. The difference is when a donkey bites somebody, it breaks through to the bones. Zen nosha for ina shogra etzim. A dog bites, but it doesn't go all the way to the bone. So Maharsha says, in other words, the point is that Rabbi Akiva is saying, I was in the mood not just to harm the Tamar Chacham a little bit, but to cause them great bodily harm until I learned what a Tamar Chacham is really all about. Tosfos, by the way, elsewhere mentions, you know, you have the story in Ksubas about how he became a Tamar Chacham, where Rachel saw his potential and married him and sent him off to the yeshiva and the whole story over there. And the Gemara says she saw he was Tsanua Umali, that he was a tsniastic person with Milus. What kind of Milus if we're saying over here that he was talking like such a lowlife? Tosfos says that's just it. He resented the Tamar Chachamim, but he had good midas. And Rachel recognized that in him and realized the reason why he's talking so badly against the Tamar Chachamim, because he doesn't realize what they really are. If he were to be exposed to what a Tamar Chacham really is, then he would completely change. And there she saw that potential in him, and she married him, and taka, everything developed from there. He's trying to make a point, in other words, that you should realize how much the Amir Oretz hate the Tamar Chachamim. So on one level, as the Gemara is going to say, and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that we do have to be careful, what we just said now, you have to be careful around them. For example, don't be mislava imam baderech. Maybe on another level, it's also telling them, you know, the fact is, look, you know, we have the various things we have to do, up yalocha, to keep our distance from them because of hilchos tumah v'tahara or whatever. But be careful, you do it in a way that it doesn't get overly misinterpreted. Don't make them more angry at us than they otherwise would have to be. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Yud Tes Elul. How do we go out of Golos? How do we come to Yom Yom Mashiach? So Chazal already told us the expression that in the Zohar, which the Alter Rebbe quotes, Nigeres Chavav, because the Jewish people will taste from the Tree of Life, which is this Sefer HaZohar, because of that, or through that, they will go out of the Golos with Rachmin, as Mashiach answered the Baal Shem Tov, Kriyafutza Minasecha Chutza, then Mashiach will come. Continuing on halachas of Ma'ariv, you have in the Velt, they say Baruch Hashem Lo'olam, you say that sitting. Now also you're not allowed to make any interruptions from Behurachim until after Shemana Esrei. Now, what about, for example, announcing Yalav Yavoi or the same Talumotter or things like that? So in the Velt, they do that, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that's not a problem because it's Tzorech HaTefillah. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe says that no, those two things go together. If you don't say Baruch Hashem La'olam, because it's a hefsek, because it's considered a hefsek between Hashkivenu and Shemana Esrei, then you shouldn't be announcing Yalav Yavoi either, or et cetera, which is why we don't. Instead, we give a clock to announce it. Then another halacha, if suppose that after Ma'ariv, there's one person left in shul, still davening. So another person who's there has to wait for him, so the one who's in the middle of davening doesn't get distracted. We learned about this in Brachas, actually, because he'd be afraid to be there all by himself, and he's going to have to walk home himself. On the other hand, if he started davening long after everybody else, at a time when it was clear he's not going to finish with the tzibur, then you don't have to wait for him, because then obviously he knew to begin with when he started Shemana Esrei that he's going to be there alone. However, the Alter Rebbe says even then midas chassidus to wait for him anyway.